What happens when a major financial institution is no longer considered systemically important? From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Amy Scott, in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. General Electric has formally asked federal regulators that it no longer be considered too big to fail. The firm says it's shrunk some of its operations and that it shouldn't qualify as what's known as a systemically important financial institution, a designation that comes with significant federal oversight. And it comes a day after the insurance company MetLife won a battle with regulators over its systemic importance. Joining me is Sabri Benishor to talk about what all this means. Sabri, remind us what a systemically important financial institution is and why these companies don't want that designation.
Well, if a financial company is massive enough, it's connected enough to the fabric of the financial system that it would pose a threat to the economy if it failed, then federal regulators can declare it to be a systemically important financial institution, or SIFI. And once they've done that, those regulators, the Treasury, the Fed, can regulate that institution more. And this comes out of Dodd-Frank legislation. So regulators can impose higher capital requirements. They can control how much debt the company takes on. And if you're a company, you may not like that. MetLife was labeled a SIFI 2 years ago and has been fighting it ever since. And for now, it's won its battle.
So MetLife won this battle to be considered less important. Are there any wider implications for this?
Well, you know, in GE's case, GE actually shrank itself down in part to get out of this SIFI status. But MetLife argued that the designation was unfair and not fact-based. So if MetLife won its fight to not be considered important, other firms will be encouraged to fight that label too. Prudential and AIG are two rivals of MetLife. They were designated systemically important. And after this, Prudential, at least, will probably appeal its labeling too. And, you know, some will say this reduces the financial stability of the U.S. economy. Others have argued, now successfully, that regulators designated MetLife and other institutions capriciously. The Obama administration, of course, could still appeal and probably will.
All right. Marketplace's Sabri Benishor, thank you. Tonight is a big night for car maker Tesla. Its long-awaited Model 3 is set to be unveiled at the company's facility near Los Angeles. The new car is expected to go 200 miles on a single charge and has a price tag starting at $35,000, which is much more affordable than previous models. Tesla hopes that'll make it a real choice for regular car buyers. Marketplace's Jed Kim reports.
With its more modest price, the Model 3 is supposed to make those rare Tesla sightings on the highway much more common. Remember, Elon Musk's vision is to shift the world to electric. But hold on, says Colin McCarricker with Bloomberg New Energy Finance.
It's in many ways more significant for Tesla than it is, of course, for the global EV industry. They really need this to work.
Other car companies have stepped up their electric game. Chevy's Bolt will deliver similar stats and will come out sooner. Still, Tesla does make a beautiful car to go with that whole no-gas thing.
It has a different level of sort of pedigree that it's bringing to the battery electric vehicle side of the market.
But can Tesla make real money? Morningstar senior equity analyst David Whiston says that'll depend on it actually delivering a car for everyone. He says the Model 3 is more like a BMW 3 Series. He wants to see
something to go rivaling a Toyota Camry, Toyota Corolla, a Ford Fusion-type competitor. Then you're talking about a real mass-market automaker.
Tonight's a preview. The first cars won't roll out for another year and a half. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
This next story comes from Silicon Valley, but it's not about the next hot app or a startup being bought for billions. It's about four-year-olds in one neighborhood of that hub of wealth and innovation and an effort to close the preschool divide. From KPCC, Deepa Fernandez reports.
I'm in Silicon Valley in a small neighborhood in East San Jose called Santee. Even though it's just a few miles from tech giants like eBay and Cisco Systems,
okay, you guys be careful. Keep it on that side, okay?
It's a different world. Elizabeth Alvarez, a longtime San Jose resident and community worker, meets me out the front of Santee Elementary School.
This neighborhood has suffered around issues with crime and a gang-impacted neighborhood.
We're the Educare Band.
Enter Educare. It's a preschool, but its vision is much more ambitious. The complex has a family resource center open to the local community. Inside, I find some kids. Their mum, Jacqueline Cortez, is getting some advice on job leads from a staff member. She tells me she hasn't been able to find a preschool seat for her toddlers, so I ask her if she comes here often. Every day, she tells me, there really aren't many places if this is closed, Cortez says. Beyond these free community spaces, there's a series of sprawling yards and classrooms.
Today my mom is going to buy me something.
What is she going to buy?
Rupali Bourne has been a preschool teacher for 2 decades, and she leaped at the chance to come teach here when the centre opened in September.
If you can look at a yard, there's no play structure. But you know what these kids are bringing? Their creative side.
The school's philosophy? Follow the child's lead in learning and play.
They can take cardboards and create houses.
I have 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's a lot like the expensive, play-based, inquiry-based preschools that abound in the more affluent neighbouring Silicon Valley communities. But this is all free for families with a low enough income, and it's paid for mostly with public pre-K dollars. So could they scale up to serve more kids, I ask? Lisa Kaufman heads Educare.
There is space for a fourth wing. We would love to build that, and we know from the interests of the families we would likely be very full very quickly.
The only thing stopping them here in super wealthy San Jose is, well, money. In Silicon Valley, I'm Deepa Fernandez for Marketplace.
And in Washington, I'm Amy Scott with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.